Right on the Sea of Galilee is the small village of Magdala. It is possibly where Mary Magdalene was born, and it's also near Capernaum. It's about a 13-minute drive, or about 6 miles, and that was where Jesus did the majority of his ministry. And today, Magdala is an interesting architectural site where they found a synagogue, actually two stacked on top of each other, dating to around the time of Jesus. And now there is a brand new hotel and a unique Catholic church drawing in the tourists to that place. The church, which is known as Duke in Altum, which is Latin for push out into the deep, is appropriately situated on the sea. And even their altar is boat-shaped. And so the upstairs in that church is for Catholic worship only. But downstairs, there is a chapel that is available to all Christian denominations. And that's where I found myself most fascinated when I was there on pilgrimage. Now, the most striking aspect of this chapel is across the back, there is a huge painting. It goes from wall to wall. And not only is its size impressive, but its size is emphasized by the fact that all of the action is at foot level. No one in the painting can be seen above mid-shin. You see big feet and sandals and ankles and robes and even the feet of Jesus and some of the fringes from his prayer shawl. It's a painting of our gospel story from today with the woman who has been bleeding for 12 years. And you can see, reaching through this maze of feet, there is a frail-looking hand that is reaching gently out to Jesus' hem. And where they make contact, there's this small little burst of light in the picture. But there is something else that I will never forget about that chapel. In the city of Mary Magdalene, in a chapel dedicated to the encounter of the bleeding woman and Jesus, at an interdenominational altar, women were not allowed to celebrate the Eucharist. Even in a space surrounded by female witness and power, women are still not recognized as legitimate ministers. And I hate the irony of that. It goes against every fiber of my being, against my theology and my understanding of Jesus. And honestly, it makes me even madder as the parent of a daughter. But I do think it makes me appreciate these two stories that we hear today of the bleeding woman and Jairus' daughter all the more. Now, an important thing I need to get out of the way before we start talking about these two is kind of a big issue in the biblical world. Throughout history, commentators and interpreters, who have mostly been men, but also a fair majority of women, have looked at the healings of these two and decided that they could be distilled down into just one thing: purity issues. They argue that the bleeding woman and the dead girl would have been deemed ritually impure by Jewish standards outlined in Leviticus. And as a result, they should have been fixated on their impure state and felt shame for it. And then touching Jesus or Jesus touching them would make him ritually impure as well. All of these commentators seem to neglect the fact that this woman who has been bleeding for 12 years is really, really sick. Her perpetual blood loss would have resulted in serious anemia. She would have been suffering from energy loss, weight loss, paleness of skin, loss of hair, brittle nails, heart palpitations, difficulty breathing, and pain in her joints. Additionally, since her internal organs aren't getting enough oxygen, they would not have been functioning properly. Now, I don't know about you, but if it were me, ritual purity would not be at the top of my list of concerns in that state. These commentators also paint the woman as a recluse, someone pushed aside and forgotten by the world, someone who could never have entered the world, lest she make everything in her wake impure. But, as Amy Jill Levine, the Jewish New Testament scholar, has pointed out, it's a load of hooey. My words, not hers. The woman's vaginal or uterine bleeding would have made any bed or surface that she sat or laid on ritually impure, and that is true. But there is nothing in the purity codes about touch. She could have walked in the crowds, gone grocery shopping, cooked and cleaned, and talked with people. Pretty much, she could carry on with normal human interaction, with the exception, of course, of her serious worsening health. All as long as she just doesn't go about sitting on anyone. In fact, according to Levine, and in the face of most biblical commentators, there is no indication in the text that she could not have had a family or neighbors that were taking care of her. And her touching Jesus, especially at the fringes of his robe, would not have made Jesus unclean. And then, in the case of the little girl, well, she was dead. I think that's kind of enough said. I don't think she was super concerned about purity either. And one more point. Being ritually impure just meant you couldn't go into the Jerusalem temple. That said, according to the purity codes, most people walking around the world in their daily life would have been considered impure. After all, most people, your average citizen, wasn't going to the temple every single day. That was for the priests. So it really didn't matter. Also, impurity wasn't some sort of permanent issue. Jesus would have just gone. He would have immersed himself in a mikveh, which is a ritual bath, and then he would have been considered clean again and temple ready. Okay, that's enough of that soapbox. So let's go back to the story. In both cases, the sheer act of touch brings about healing. A synagogue leader, Jairus, comes up to Jesus and tells him to come with him. His daughter has died, and he needs Jesus to come touch her so she will live again. There are two important things to notice here. One is that Jesus, as God and also as the teacher, has authority here. He could say no, and yet he does what the man says. Jesus follows him to heal his daughter. The second is how Jesus heals her. He took her hand, said, "Little girl, get up," and she got up. But of course, interrupting this story is the bleeding woman who comes up behind Jesus, and for whatever reason, and it doesn't entirely matter, but it may have been a concern she had that the disciples may have shooed her away, not wanting her to get near Jesus, and she touches the fringes of his robe. It's touch, again. And Jesus tells her that she is healed. Mark tells us that when she touched his robe, Jesus felt power flow out of him into her, and it healed her. I imagine something similar happened with the touch of Jairus' daughter. Healing power flows out of Jesus instead of any possible impurity flowing into him. It's interesting. Both the young girl and the bleeding woman are healed and brought back to a place where they can lead normal lives again. And I don't think it's an accident that Jairus' daughter was wealthy and powerful because of the position that her father held, and that the bleeding woman spent all of her money seeking healing from doctors only to be bankrupt and sicker for it. One spent 12 years in privilege, the other 12 years sick and impoverished. They are at the two opposite ends of the Jewish social scale, but Jesus treats and he heals them equally. He stops while he's walking through the crowd to identify the woman who was healed by touching him. And after healing Jairus' daughter, he stops to remind her parents that she is alive again, yes, but don't forget to feed and care for her. Both are special. Both are loved in Jesus' eyes. The womanist scholar Will Gaffney once linked these stories to a rap by Tupac Shakur, where he asks, "And since we all came from a woman, got our name from a woman, and our game from a woman, I wonder why we take from our women, why we rape our women. Do we hate our women?" His lyrics are made all the more real when I recently learned and was flabbergasted that women are guaranteed no rights in the Constitution or its amendments. While the Supreme Court has interpreted some aspects of the Constitution to protect women in some situations, it is not guaranteed. It could all change in the blink of an eye. For over a century now, stalwart justice warriors have been trying to get the Equal Rights Amendment ratified, which would enshrine equal rights for men and women. But it's not yet a reality. But we shouldn't stop pursuing what is just and what is right and what is healing for people. Jairus' daughter had her father to advocate for her. The bleeding woman didn't, so she took the initiative herself. And that's good news for us. Because no matter how brazen we think we are, we can always bring our concerns about ourselves and others to God, who hears us and sees us and heals. And for that matter, we can engage the world to further Jesus' example of actual, true, and lasting equality and healing for all people. How would you do that in your spheres of influence, daring to believe that we have a role in healing and in loving others?